you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It is Tuesday, September 28th, live from my apartment and somewhere in Los Angeles. This is the Ben Jarofsky Show. I am DJ Nate, filling in for the one and only Dr. D. Today on the program, we have Alderman Scott Wagesback. And now, your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this It Takes a Village Tuesday, and here's why. Because it's literally taken a village, ladies and gentlemen, a village of millennials to set me up. As you all know, I had to do the show for the couple of weeks while I'm in Los Angeles because I'm about to be a grandfather. Yes, indeed. This old man is about to be a grandfather. My guest is giving me a thumbs up sign. All right. When I met this guest, my kid was baby, man. That's how long I've known this guest. But I'm about to be a grandfather. So my wife and I came out to L.A. to help our daughter and our son-in-law bring the new one into the world. So we set up operation from this bed and breakfast somewhere in Los Angeles. And ladies and gentlemen, all of a sudden everything broke down. Microphone broke down. Headphones broke down. Computer broke down. I got millennials scurrying all over Los Angeles trying to help me out. I'm setting up backup rooms to do the show from. I got like three backup rooms, Scott, all over Los Angeles. And then I start the show today and Scott is in the sound check. Goes, I can't hear you, Ben. My whole life I've been a loudspeaker. No one has ever said, Ben, I can't hear you. Anyway, somehow or other, we stitched together. I want to shout out to all the millennials and my wife who helped me. Before I bring Scott on, I just want to say one thing about the Bears game. I promised I would do this. The Bears were absolutely dreadful yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, on Sunday. And they got obliterated in one of the most embarrassing spectacles I've ever sat through. I don't know if Scott Wagesback, my guest, is a Bears fan, so I don't know if he watched it or not, but it was awful. And I've been a Bear fan since the mid-1960s. And it was just a disgraceful display of ineptitude. And so the real challenge in the aftermath was, how would the Sun-Times and the Tribune handle the headlines? You know, we have headline battles on the show all the time. Eric Zorn, dear friend of the show, sent me a gloating email. Eric Zorn may no longer be a columnist at the Chicago Tribune, but apparently he has Chicago Tribune ink running through his veins. He still loves his Tribunal. And he sent me an email that said, what did it say? Let me go where I'm going to get this Eric Zorn out. The headline battle. It doesn't look good for your bright one, Ben. Yes, you're right, Eric. My beloved bright one, the Chicago Sun-Times, got trounced by the Tribune. Here's the Sun-Times headline. It says, a sack feeling, like a sad feeling, only sack, because the quarterback was sacked a bunch of times. And the Tribune said, sad sack. Eric wrote, I think your beloved bright one lost the headline battle. Eric, I think you're correct. Come on, Sun-Times. Get your game together, all right? Just a little diversion there. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to bring on my guest, Alderman Scott Wagesback, Finance Committee Chair, Alderman of the 32nd Ward since 2007. I can't believe the years have flown by so fast. I remember when he was a baby-faced kid running against Ted Madlack, won it in a runoff. It was a heated election. He was definitely somebody that nobody sent. Scott Wagesback, and now I'm looking at him on my screen, and he's sitting in Ed Burke's old office. Scotty, I'm just stunned to see you sitting in that office. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And I am sitting in his office, but I did get a new chair. So
what happened to the old chair?
It was green, like everything else. So I made a couple changes. That's all. Brought my old chair in here and had to get something new there. But yes.
Well, there's nothing on the wall, so you might throw up a picture or something. I don't know. Throw up a picture of Ed Burke and a dartboard. But let's just before we get started with we have a lot on the agenda to talk about, Scott, and I ran through it very briefly before we went on the air. We want to talk budget. Scott's chair of the finance committee, so the entire city budget will go through his committee. There'll be hearings. I want to talk Jim Gardner. I'm just listing these things before we get started so I don't forget them. And you remind me, Jim Gardner, of course, the alderman of the 45th Ward, Anna Emerson, a key aide to the finance committee. I was one of the women insulted by Jim Gardner. She came on my show about 2 weeks ago. It was a really good interview. I urge everybody to check it out. So we'll get Scott's thought on Jim Gardner's apology. We got to talk about Lifeguard Gate. Somehow or other, the Park District has allowed Mike Kelly to still remain as chief superintendent of the general superintendent of the Park District, even though this horrific sex scandal with the lifeguards has been going on for months. Give a shout out to Dan Mealopoulos at WBEZ for doing a great job with breaking that story. And then, of course, why don't we start here? Just on a personal note, an old friend of mine got in a lot of trouble, Alderman Rick Munoz. He's come to the Hideout show, Scott, many times that McDumkey and I had at the Hideout. I think you may have been on stage with him once. Maybe not. I can't remember. You've been on our stage, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I know he was an old friend and an ally of yours. He was the chair of the Progressive Caucus, and then he lost his way. I think alcohol got the better of him, and he started pilfering from the Progressive Caucus Fund, man. It doesn't get much lower than that. And he pled guilty yesterday. Why don't you talk a little bit about your thoughts watching your old colleague, your mentor in some ways, Rick Munoz, pleading guilty. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. You know, we kind of figured out what was going on a couple of years ago, you know, shortly before he got in trouble with the feds. And I think the problem was, as a lot of aldermen or colleagues have said, and people who knew him, was he hit the bottle and he went quickly downhill. And I think he would say it's not an excuse, but it did affect his work as an alderman. I think it affected his work within the caucus. And it was really sad to see, you know, what happened yesterday. He's going to go to jail, most likely. I don't recall if they gave a certain amount of months, might have been 10 or more. But, you know, it's just really sad to see any elected official that has a duty to the public going down that path. And I knew that he was getting ready to retire anyway. So it was really sad to see that we were kind of being misled there, kind of really being misled. And I was running the caucus at the time, and I should have had closer tabs on what he was doing. You know, but as a caucus, as a group, we thought that we were in good stead, and we weren't. And that led to his demise. So it's really just sad to see somebody who I think had done a pretty darn good job on a lot of different issues. He was always at the forefront saying, hey, you want to push the button on this? You want to go after some of the policies of the Daley administration and the Emanuel administration. So in that sense, he was really a great person to work with. I think it was when he started drinking more heavily, that was his downfall.
Yeah, I'll just say this as well to what you add on to this. I knew Rick outside of the realm of politics. Both our kids went to the same high school at the same time, and we used to go to basketball games. His son played basketball. My daughter played basketball. And we had an agreement that we were just going to be dads in the gym. And we would talk back. He's an obsessive basketball. He's a sports fan. The guy knows his sports. And so we used to talk sports and kids. And we really talk politics when we're in the gym, you know. And I really like Rick. And it hurt really bad because, you know, the Progressive Caucus, ladies and gentlemen, just to set this up in context, back in the day when Scotty was running the Progressive Caucus and Rick Munoz was there and Joanna Klonsky was the publicist, this group was on the outs. This group was like the old-fashioned independents. It's the remnants of independence. This group didn't have a lot of clout. Didn't have any juice at all. I don't think there were any progressive members of the Progressive Caucus, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, who were committee chairs, for instance.
No, never. And that was a thing. I mean, you would never get any committee chairs, and you resigned yourself to that fact. You wouldn't get any extra of the... not even extras, but like the benefits that other aldermen were getting. You were often called last on budget hearings. You were basically relegated to the back seat. You couldn't get hearings on anything. Unlike now, you know, the mayor, we can talk about this later. The mayor's really opened the door. When I look at the committees now, we call on the new alderman, the freshman alderman. We call on progressives, whoever it might be. And there's a lot of parity there. So a lot, and hopefully that stays that way for the future, but it is night and day. I don't think anybody realizes how much difference there is between just 2 to 3 years ago and now, and, you know, in all those prior years. I think you're right. I mean, you couldn't even get called on half the time, or if you voted the wrong way against Daly or Rahm, you got mocked or laughed at. And, you know, going back to like the parking meter deal, you know, you couldn't even provide an opinion on that kind of stuff.
Wait, before we go any further, please tell the story. You're going to go, oh, Ben, come on, don't make me tell it again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Scott Wagner's back. Baby alderman. He's his freshman year. Mayor Daly runs the world. City of Chicago, okay? So you got this baby alderman, his freshman year. He's the 32nd ward. Follow me now, some people. You could do the math. That means he's sitting in the city council next to the alderman of the 33rd ward, and that would be one, Richard Mel. Yeah, back then it was Richard Mel. It was not my girl, Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez. It was Richard Mel. And so they're having a vote on basic – this is a vote. This is a vote that took place in the Chicago City Council, ladies and gentlemen, in your lifetime when you weren't paying any attention. The vote was to essentially give a blank check to Mayor Daly to finance the Olympics. Scott wanted to vote against it. We had been talking about it. I go, Scott, you got to vote against it. He was like, I'm ready to vote against it. And it would have been 49-1, so I'm not going to kill you, Scott, for voting for it. But talk about what Mel was whispering in your ear as they came close. Come on, just tell the people. What was Mel saying?
Well, it was kind of like, to paraphrase, it was sort of like, you want them to blame you for when they don't get the Olympics? You know, the president of the United States supports the Olympics, and you're going to go against the president? And it kind of went a little further, and he's leaning, and people were coming up to me and like kneeling down, just saying, please, please. And there was a point where Daly was given this speech, and I kind of felt that he was given a speech to say, we need the Olympics, you know, and the Olympic people were there. They had athletes there. And I was the lone holdout. I think Manny Flores was with me until the night before. And so I was kind of, honestly, I was cringing. I was thinking, oh, good Lord, it's going to be 49-1 and I will get destroyed. And Dick Mel leaned over and he was like, they'll kill you, man. They'll kill you. And I just looked at him like, what? He goes, they'll kill you, man. Something like that. And I said, all right. I don't think we're going to beat Spain or the other countries that were going at that time. If you remember, I think it was Spain, Brazil, there was somebody else, the fourth one. And they were all making deals for F-16s, you know, like major military arms deals. And I was kind of like, the only thing we have to offer are Vienna hot dogs. So, all right, I don't think we're going to win, so I'll vote for it. And yes, I capitulated, but I also preserved my life. So,
yeah, no, I think it was a smart move. I mean, you know, it's funny listening to your recollection. Yeah, the other countries got a lot more money. And Chicago, you know, was so infatuated with Daly in those days.
Yeah.
And he was so powerful that the prevailing wisdom in the city of Chicago was that, of course, we're going to get the Olympics. Or maybe it will be one of two. It's going to come down to us in Brazil because Mayor Daly wants it. And Mayor Daly is like the sun god. Whatever he wants, he gets. And what people in Chicago didn't realize is that you just live in Chicago. It's just one city in the state of Illinois. It's a big world out there where Mayor Daly is not the sun god, okay?
I remember, yeah. Well, remember, they were late to the actual announcement in the big IOC conference where they had the other countries all lined up and they're like ready to punch the ticket. And there's video of the Chicago guys. I mean, we were out of our league, essentially. They were running down a hallway trying to get there in time for the announcement, only to hear the words, you know, fourth place, Chicago. And it was like, boop, boop, boop.
Chicago got trounced. Come on, Chicago, stop crying, little baby.
Hey, the good thing is we got the Bulls. So, hey, I'll throw you, if the Bears are sucking gas, the Chicago Fire, which I'm a huge Chicago Fire fan, They're sucking gas. At least we got the Bulls and Lonzo Ball and D-Row, Zach LaVine. I think they're ready to go this year.
I'm ready. I'm with you. Championship in Grand Park this June. Everybody get ready. All right, let's put the sports aside. One of the interesting things I've seen, Scott, in the Chicago City Council since Lori Lightfoot took office, I welcome this, get your thoughts on this, is that many of the aldermen are using some of the same tactics that the machine aldermen used against the Progressive Caucus that we were just alluding to. And they do it all the time, and it forces the mayor to be nimble and quick on her feet and call new meetings all the time. But I don't object to it. I think this is my opinion. I'd love to hear your opinion. It's called, a second independent branch of government, which we need in Chicago, legislative branch. So like when Jeanette Taylor tag team with Raylo to postpone, I forget what the initiative was. It may have been the Corporation Council. There's been so many. I did not get upset by that at all. There was a meeting. Mayor Lightfoot called a meeting within 2 days, and she got what she wanted anyway. To me, it's a sign of a little more independence on the Chicago City Council, which is what you were advocating when you were chairing the Progressive Caucus. Now that you're an ally of Mayor Lori Lightfoot and you're in the Finance Committee chair, how do you view it? Do you agree with me, or do you more sympathetic with Mayor Lori Lightfoot on this one?
Well, actually, I think it depends on what the issue is. And that issue of the hire for Celia Meza, who was the Corporation Counsel, the Latino Caucus actually really endorsed that because they wanted the first Latina ever to be the Corporation Counsel. And a lot of people looked at that particular one as sort of an underhanded way to tell the mayor, on a completely separate issue of settlements, they were attacking the personality of that corporation council. So in that particular one, I thought it was very wrong. There was no direct correlation there. And it was sort of like, well, we're just going to give a little smackdown to this woman who had worked her way up, to be the first Latina ever to be corp counsel. Honestly, I thought that was the wrong way to go about it. And there were only two people who really joined in. The Latino caucus was very upset, but I'll be honest, I think there's other moments where that is appropriate, where, let's say the mayor's, if the mayor were trying to jam through the ordinance on forfeiture overnight, I would say, yeah, that's a good place to do a defer and publish. But I think what we've done, I'll give you another example. With the Finance Committee, they had municipal lending ordinance. And we held it up for almost a year in the Finance Committee. But at the same time, we were working with all the departments involved, with the comptroller, with the banks, and with all the progressive aldermen to say, what did we want to see an improvement? And so we kind of took a different tack, telling the mayor, like, we're not going to pass this thing and we're not going to go forward. But, so you're going to have to hold it in the committee. So there's ways to do it. On that particular one with the Corp Council, I don't think anybody knew that they were going to do that either. And in the old Progressive Caucus, we would always talk beforehand and say, hey, here's an ordinance that we think we should defer and publish. And what's our strategy to slow that down or have additional hearings? And we haven't seen that in the Progressive Caucus.
Well, this was definitely, not to go back to relitigate this one, this was not, most definitely not a Progressive Caucus decision. It was Jeanette Taylor. I'm a big fan of Jeanette Taylor, as you probably know, Scott, tag teaming with Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward, is a good friend of the show. And so it was kind of an unusual odd couple, to put it mildly, because Raylo is really conservative. I don't know if you know that.
He's
come on, Raylo. He swears up and down he didn't vote for Trump. He's been on this show. I didn't vote for Trump, but I don't know, Raylo. Jeanette
Taylor. Yeah, but he's on the TV show, that one dude that's really bad. What's his name?
Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson. Yeah, that's his favorite guy.
He's got him on speed dial. Tucker Carlson here with me from the 15th Ward in the city of. He probably don't even know what ward he's from. He's just that alderman. I was with Jeanette Taylor on that one 100% because I just didn't like how the city was treating Jeanette Young.
That's a huge issue, but that has to be resolved in the committee where we talked about settlements and where we try to have very open conversations with all the lawyers on those settlements. So You know, you got to be careful. You also have a fiduciary duty to the city. You have an ethical duty, and we have to always keep that in mind. And my predecessor, whether that happened or not, that's something else. But that's what I always try to speak to my new colleagues about.
All right, let's get into your predecessor and the way things have changed. In the old days, when it was Rahm and Daley, and your predecessor, of course, Ed Burke, finance committee chair, and the mayor's floor leader was Patrick O'Connor, the 40th ward. They would want to see votes of 45-5 or 48-2. There's 50 aldermen in the city council, ladies and gentlemen. You do the math. In other words, overwhelming votes in favor of the budget. Things have been different under Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And again, I applaud this. I applaud democracy in the city of Chicago. And I don't mind that the mayor has to scrape and scrap to get 26 votes to pass her budget. How do you view it, Scott? Do you take it, like, do you want to see 48-2s and 45-5s, or are you okay with 26-24 if necessary?
I'm actually okay with it. And I know that the mayor got, maybe last year, there were a couple times where she got upset on some of those. And my discussion with her and her staff was basically, hey, if people are voting their conscience and they see something majorly wrong, it's up to you guys to convince them otherwise or find some other way to get them on board, something that might be appealable to them, say in a budget vote, you know, that we have coming up here. I think this year when, for instance, when you look at this budget, it is a great budget. It is the best budget I have seen in all my years here because it really pumps money where we wanted it for a long time. So if you see a budget like that and you get the 40-10 vote, I think that's fine. And really, I don't mind when there's some of these close votes. We've had a lot of close votes on settlement issues. We've had a lot of close votes on issues in the finance coming out of the finance committee. And I've held, contrary to the wants of the fifth floor, I have held a lot of stuff in committee when they were kind of like, hey, pass this thing. And I'm kind of like, no, my colleagues want more discussion on it. So we're just going to hold off. And they're like, okay. You know, and so what we're saying there is just more discussion. If we need more legal explanations or policy explanations, let's do it. And then we can come back with a vote the next month or the next week. And actually, I think you're right. It has actually worked out pretty well. I mean, it makes us all work harder, but it's a lot less. You know, Dick Simpson, he'll still pick the votes that he wants to put into his council voting piece that every year, but I would kind of want to see how many of those contrary votes get into that, you know, if I were to pick and choose, you know, you can talk about a half a dozen things in there that have been held up by us just to counter what the mayor was wanting to do in terms of speed passage.
Do you get any trash talking from Ed Burke, the former chair of the finance committee? You know, like where he says, you know, when I was chair of the finance committee, we didn't have dissent. It was 45. Does he ever do any trash talking like that?
No, not to me. He has tried to play with the rule book a little bit, you know, where he's sort of like, well, 40 years ago when I was messing with Harold Washington, this is what we did and we're going to do it again today. And it's sort of like, sit down, you know, that's not what the rule is. And there's been a couple of aldermen who have already been mentioned that, you know, were saying, well, you know, when Ed Burke was the chairman, we used to get this or we used to get that. And I said, well, that's very interesting because I never saw it when I was alderman. So were you getting something that the rest of us weren't? Or the fact is we weren't getting it at all. You know, pockets of information, data, things that were being shared. We share more information out of this finance committee now than I think most aldermen can keep up with. And it's, you know, kind of a badge for us that Ann Emerson working with me, Owen Brew, we pump out a lot of information that we hadn't seen in the past. So I don't think there's much argument there from folks like him to say, you know, the way we were doing it before was better.
All right. Well, let's get to the budget. You say it's the best budget ever in the city of Chicago. And Raylo would disagree with you, I'm pretty sure, Alderman Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward. His point is that the city of Chicago has been a beneficiary of federal assistance for COVID relief. And without that federal assistance for COVID relief, the city would be facing the same old problems of huge deficits and raising taxes, property taxes, to pay its bills. And we won't have this huge COVID assistance next year. So it's a one-time deal. We got to spend the money more wisely. What's your response to that criticism from Raylo?
That's interesting, coming to a guy who voted for every one of Rahm's budgets without any question. And that is the truth. And I kind of laugh a little bit. I don't mock anybody like they used to mock us all the time, which we're, you know, guys like Arena and I would say, look, we just want to look at the finances a little bit closer. They should be more transparent. Whatever it might be, you know, this program could save 10 million here, 20 million there. And I'm actually glad a lot of people are looking and scrutinizing those dollars, but yes, there is COVID funds coming in, but we're not unlike any other city in the United States that, you know, has a large labor force. You know, we have the CFL that we've worked with. I think they've been at the table. The CFL has been a great partner in everything that the mayor's been doing. You know, one of the guys from SEIU is now her top labor person. And, you know, I think having those kind of folks inside City Hall has been a great thing. It really helps a lot of aldermen out to understand that, you know, we are moving in that right direction. So, yeah, I mean, I don't mind his criticism, but he's got to be speaking with the right set of facts. So I don't think he is there. The investments that we're getting from the federal government, it is true without those investments, you know, hey, without COVID, we'd still be in a difficult space, but we are here. The mayor is hearing and listening to people and putting the money where the progressives have asked for it to be. I mean, we could talk about around the edges, like should there be a little bit more going to one pocket versus another? That might be true, but you have to have a balance. Without a balance, you know, you can't swing one way or the other. I'm happy to see it swinging in the direction of mental health services, affordable housing. And she's also tackling the issues of aldermanic prerogative. She's tackling the issues of, you know, longstanding problems within the machine operation of government. And it takes, you know, if it's been going one way for 40, 50 years, it's hard to change that around.
The CFL that Scott alluded to says Chicago Federation of Labor. And I just want to point out they're a sponsor of this show. Thank you very much, Bob Ryder. You mentioned mental health services. Is there any chance, Scott, that they're going to reopen the six facilities that Mayor Rahm foolishly, I guess that's really a not even strong enough word, stupidly, some would say, closed in his first budget back in 2011.
Yeah, I don't think they are in this budget. That's been brought up by several aldermen, and I think what they're trying to do is bolster the existing clinics and then continue to fund the neighborhood organizations and drive the funding, not just to the FQHCs, but what a lot of aldermen have said is there's a lot of community organizations out there who have people doing this kind of work on the ground, and they want to see more money going to those community organizations. So this year, I think we're seeing like almost 90 million to mental health services to those areas, and we need to build on that. But I don't think they're going to reopen those six mental health clinics. The key for us when the year after we voted on that, and that was a bad vote for me too, because they had promised like every one of those 3,000 people that utilize those services are going to be put into those other clinics. And the year after, we found out almost none of those people were. They just fell through the cracks. And I think CDPH, you know, we've changed the health board too. We modernized the health board for the first time in decades. They have people coming from the neighborhoods that are going to serve on that board. That was a modernization thing that the mayor did. I fully supported that because it brought people from the community to serve on that board. And they're the ones who are going to try to pinpoint where the needs are the most and get those funds there. So I think it's going in the right direction. We just need to continue to fund it, especially coming out of COVID. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of people who need these services coming out of the pandemic, where we've been locked into ourselves for a long time.
Well, to this point of the clinics, a lot of the lefties come on my show, say that the city should be tougher with the banks and not use the spend so much money paying the fees on the debt, and instead use that money to do things like reopen the clinics. And you've been on the outside looking in on this issue for many years, Scott, talking about, in fact, I've interviewed you many times about the amount of money, the debt structuring that the city of Chicago has and the amount of money we pay in interest and how that money, if it wasn't being paid in interest in the banks, could go for other programs. Now that you're a chair of the finance committee, has it changed your worldview about this particular issue? Do you think Chicago is spending too much money on interest?
Well, we were because we had bad practices and we just kept doing the long-term refinancing and kicking the can down the road with scoop and toss. Scoop and toss started under Daley. It became worse and worse over the years. To be honest, I think Rahm in his last term tried to start to turn that ship a little bit. And we saw in the last, I think his last year, they were really focused on trying to get rid of scoop and toss and phase it out. So there's a couple things there. One, the municipal depositories ordinance, I mentioned that we held it up for a whole year. And within that, we're working with the comptroller, Rishma Soni, and my staff and Harry Osterman and others to basically say, we're putting more parameters on data transparency and what banks are forced to give us, hopefully in so that we can pull more information out of them about where they're putting mortgages into the city, which neighborhoods, and really get more transparency around that because of the lack of investments by them into communities, Black and brown communities, communities of color. So we have made a significant change there. The other area that we've made significant changes is in the audits. And we've said we want half of the people working on the audits to be people of color. So that we can get more people who understand that these services are, there are people that can do these services, but to be more focused on equity issues. The third area is looking at these bond deals. So in 1 year, we went from low teens, and the Black Caucus and the Latino Caucus were asking this for years. And I sat there many years and I would say, hey, let's hold up this deal at the airport, or let's hold up this bond deal. You guys have enough votes to do it. But the pressure from Daley or Rahm always flipped people, and the votes, again, were always, you know, 48 to 2 or something like that. What we've done is basically with the mayor's directive was get us up to 50%+, and we are there in the first year. So we've got the lawyers, the underwriters, the finance firms doing a lot of this work at 50%+ so that equity is shared there. And within that, more transparency about our interest rates. So if we sat there and said, you know, we're improving our finances overall, we have more equity. If we're getting rid of scoop and toss, which they're doing, and we're paying off more of our debt, our interest rates are going to go down. Our ratings are going to hopefully go up, which they're creeping up right now with what we're doing. We're pumping more money in. We have, you know, our largest, two largest things that we have to pay into are the pensions and our debt. And until we knock that down, we can't really do a lot of the things we want to. So to be honest, if you sit there and you say, we're not going to pay the banks back, and that's just going to be our policy, you know what they're going to do to us. They're just going to say default. And there's nothing that prevents them from saying default to a municipality. You know, we can't declare bankruptcy. We can't just tell banks no. You can't tell the bank, no, I'm not going to pay my, I mean, I guess you could say I'm not going to pay my mortgage. But what happens next? Or you're not going to pay your car back. What happens next? You know, the collectors come, you default. Same thing happens with government. Your ratings would go down. You'll be paying more every time you borrow because you're paying higher interest. So we don't have that luxury of just saying, screw the banks, we're not going to pay them. We have to work at them in other venues and other methods. And that's what we're doing.
It's I feel very a bizarre saying about what I'm about to say, but Donald Trump operated a little differently when it came to banks. He was always saying to the banks, you know, that's how he built Trump Tower in the city of Chicago, Scott.
Isn't that guy going to jail pretty soon, though? I mean, or he's going to run for governor of Florida or something. President.
Oh, my goodness.
Look what he did to our country.
What's that?
I mean, you don't want that kind of method of operation, period. And I get where the progressives are going with it. I've talked to my colleagues like Daniel Espada and others, and look, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do to change the way things have been going for decades. We have to change the Illinois Constitution. We have to change federal laws too. But we are holding banks' feet to the fire in different ways and slowly building up on that.
You know, you mentioned your progressive, and then you saw talking about Daniel Espada. He's actually a Democratic Socialist. And the world in city council has changed since Lori Lightfoot, the last municipal election. You have people to the left of the Progressive Caucus, and you have people to the right of the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
And Andre Vasquez was talking about this when he was on the show from last year's budget. And he felt that, and I'm paraphrasing, that he and Maria Haddon were able to encourage, let's put that word euphemistically, Mayor Lori Lightfoot to move a little bit toward the left and move away from what aldermen in the northwest side, southwest side, the conservative aldermen like the Mike Napolitano and Jim Gardner and O'Shea were advocating. And so, like, the terrain is a lot different politically, he was explaining, in the city council right now. And there's like a conservative faction that, if you don't watch, could bring the mayor to the right. How do you see it? How do you see the situation in the city council? Do you agree with Andre's analysis?
No, not really. I don't think she gives much credit to guys like Gardner and Napolitano in terms of like, hey, here's what we want to do, and you either it's either our way or the highway. I think she's challenged them on a lot of the, well, hopefully will challenge them on some of the issues that they've brought up. I think listening to, I'm in a position where I can try to influence them whenever I can. And I think that's where you see in her committee chairs that, you know, some of them were there before. I wasn't. But I think I would hope that they listen to me every once in a while and that there's a lean towards the progressive side of things. I don't necessarily know if she was sort of just hanging out over there with the right. I think she's always been looking at everybody and saying, what is it that you want to hear? Bring to the table, and what can we do to work that in? You know, a lot of people were upset with the CFL in last year's budget, and they were going to vote against the budget, even though Bob Ryder was saying, hey, we're saving jobs, and, you know, they're putting money into the pensions. What are you guys doing? So there were a lot of people on that last year budget who were prepared to just tell the CFL, labor doesn't matter in this one. So I don't know, there's always a balance, but I tend to see it, having known what Daley and Rahm did, there's a lot more listening going on here than I've ever seen before.
Well, I think, yeah, now you're bringing back memories of last year's budget, but as I recall, there was a demand from the Northwest and Southwest side, Alderman O'Shea and Napolitano, for more police, more money, to spend hiring police. And
that's always there.
Yeah. And that's what Andre was talking about. Like, if the mayor might have gone in that direction, but he and Maria pulled her. Well, listen, he's telling it his way. And when he tells it his way, he's the man. All right.
Okay.
It's Ricky Alderman from the 40th Ward. But the point is that, and I agree with the larger point that Andre's making, that there's political pressure ideologically, which I didn't see in past administrations. Like a guy like Raylo, I don't recall him speaking out ideologically in opposition to Mayor Rahm on things like policing issues, law enforcement issues, the way he has with Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, same. Matt O'Shea. It's the same things. Yeah,
I can't remember Matt O'Shea in a million years saying anything. And even old boy down in the 13th Ward, Michael Madigan's guy, Quinn, that guy never said anything. Now suddenly he's Patrick Henry. So, you know, I just got to laugh, Scotty. I'm like, where were you guys when Carlos Ramirez Rosa needed a little assistance? Okay.
That's true. Yeah.
Jeez.
But that's good, though. And I do agree. You know, it's always helpful to have the push from these different angles. But look, I remember Daley I was PNG to commissioners. You as a commissioner were not allowed to talk to me back in the day. And that is not true today. The aldermen speak to all the commissioners. They speak to the staff. There's a lot of back and forth, and there's a lot of relationships that have been built, even with this new crop of progressives that I often say to them, look, guys, the doors are open. You just have no idea. And that's not to say you shouldn't do what you're doing because we didn't have it in the past. I'm glad it's this way that it is more open.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit before we close it down. And we got to talk about, I mentioned Gardner. We got to get back to him. Alderman Jim Gardner, 45th Ward, rookie alderman, defeated your good friend and colleague, John Arena, in 2019. How do I put this? He was caught, I suppose. That's the word. His private text revealing all sorts of derogatory comments to various women throughout the city were revealed, published, including text against Ann Emerson. I already mentioned this, top aide to the finance committee, who came on the show about a week ago. And then Gardner, I don't get this. He called you to apologize. He didn't call Ann. He called you. Like you're the dad. And he's, I'm sorry, dad, for what I said about your daughter. Kind of thought it was really weird. Subsequently, he did a full apology. Why don't you take it from there, Scott, and your thoughts?
Well, I basically told him, look, you have a daughter that you're going to have to explain all these things that you've said and done to your constituents, to your daughter in some future year, when she's beyond 1 year. But you need to call my staff and apologize. You need to call Ann. You need to call Joanne. It wasn't about me. It was about his cultural problems with women and the way he attacked them. I mean, he made a joke about a jacket or something. I didn't even care about that. But to me, it's this broader culture that we've seen against women. And it was pretty clear from those texts that's what was happening. But I also saw it in the constituency issues. And that was a bigger problem, because not serving your constituents or deliberately saying that you're going to withhold services or threaten them or whatever it might be, that's the bigger problem. And I think that's why we saw the FBI looking into it, the inspector general. You can get up there and you can apologize about comments you made, but there's some of those things that obviously from the other several indictments that we've seen of city council members are very problematic, not just for the phrases used, but for the constituents and for government in general.
So what about his apology that he made to the full council last week? Did you find that, were you convinced by it?
I'm not even sure why he was, speaking. I suppose it was okay, but really that should have gone to, a park or something in the 45th ward and stand before the constituents who've been protesting and tell them I'm sorry, and then open up that office so it's not you can't come in here type thing. So I think there's a lot more that needs to be done, and it's either up to him or it's up to the constituents actually to see if they want to have him in 2 years.
And then the other matter that I give you credit for speaking out on, a little disappointed more aldermen haven't spoken out on about it. It's the ongoing scandal at the Park District regarding the sexual harassment and in some cases accusations of assault on women lifeguards. The story broke. Well, let me back up. About a year ago, there was an initial whistleblower letter from a woman lifeguard to Mike Kelly explaining what was happening. Mike Kelly promised her that he would look into it immediately. And he sat on it for 6 weeks, Scott, 6 freaking weeks. And then finally, a second whistleblower sent a letter to the mayor's office. The mayor's office forwarded that to Mike Kelly. So suddenly he had two whistleblower reports. And it was at that point that he sent the matter over to the inspector general's office of the Park District to investigate. And we're talking about accusations of assault.
They were whistleblowers, but they were the actual victims. And we're talking sexual assault of minors. We're talking sexual harassment, widespread cover up. The mayor sent it back over and said, what are you doing about this? She thought when I put in for the inspector general of the city to help investigate, because the OIG, who conveniently resigned when we found out more serious ethical violations about her prior work at Cook County within the juvenile justice system there, where she had an affair with somebody that she was supposed to be investigating. And obviously that didn't happen. That kind of blew the doors off this thing. But the big thing for me was Nathan Kipp, who was the deputy inspector general over there. Here's a guy who's investigating. He writes a report. It's available online. The report, the initial report is available on the Park District website. All your listeners can go over there and take a look at it. And it starts to set the tone for where this investigation is going to go. Lo and behold, they bring on some other lawyers. They massage this thing. It's going on for over a year and a half now. And they fire Nathan Kipp, the deputy inspector general, because he's saying, this thing is massive. We're talking about managers, assistant managers. We're talking about a cover-up and scandal. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going on there. WBZ, Dan Mihalopoulos, has done the best job of not just investigating, but doing a timeline, which is available on WBZ. I suggest everybody go look at it, because this is an endemic problem, not just in society, but definitely in the lifeguard system, and aquatics and the pools. Your kid who might be swimming at the pool, your kid who might want to be a lifeguard, this is not going away by brushing it aside and saying, we're going to massage some of the edges of our policies here. I had a meeting, and I've had Michelle Smith with me on this whole thing. There are problems within the whole process of not just the investigation now that Kipp has been fired. And he's, you know, he's got a direct retaliation claim against him right there. He was trying to say, we've got a bigger problem here. And they cut him off at the legs. And he's the only guy who was trying to get this thing out other than Dan Mihalopoulos. Now, I look at it and I say, we need the help of the IG. It's now gone over to the Cook County State's Attorney for the Sex Crimes Unit. Perhaps the FBI might get involved because we had tampering with witnesses. But the whole thing is a culture that's been going on there for years and years and decades. And if we don't put a stop to it, our children and future lifeguards could still be put in a situation that they've been for the last few decades, which is completely wrong.
I just pause, folks, just to think about what Scott said. I can't believe I forgot that part. The guy, the investigator, Kipp, who was investigating, he's the one who got fired. Only in Chicago.
And I, you know, I had a meeting, and I honestly, I've said, I think the superintendent, a lot of staff down below are all culpable in this thing. The board, which has said virtually nothing, they went and hired a new IG without any input from anybody else. They weren't telling the mayor what was going on. They were telling her everything's okay. And then she's getting caught up in this thing. And, you know, the worst thing that I heard about this whole thing was that someone up at the top there, you know, mentioning that it was nothing but disenchanted staff and sour grapes. And I almost bit my lip off, because I have never been so disgusted hearing something like that. When young girls are being attacked, raped, assaulted, harassed, and everybody gets let go, everybody gets to either resign or walk away from these jobs or get a little suspension, and the only guy getting fired is the guy doing the investigation. It is outlandish, it's wrong, and it, you know, it's typical of Chicago, but it's a sister agency, so they kind of sit off there on their own and decide to do their own thing. But it's something that, you know, we're still hounding away at. I want to see massive change there. I want to see a lot of people gone. Because they're part of the culture, and their culture will not change as long as those people are there. And all the policies have to change too. And I brought, just before I came up to this, I was sitting in with our HR department, and I asked them the question, what do you do with these sister agencies to get us up to the highest standards and practices of HR around sexual harassment and our policies around that? And the answer was, you know, we try to work together with these people. We try to get to the highest standards, but it's got to come from the mayor. She's going to have to make the next moves to get this done. And if that means firing people, then so be it. But it has to be a massive approach to this thing to put an end to that, not only at the lifeguard situation, but throughout any department where we see this happening.
Scott, your humble opinion, does Superintendent Mike Kelly, does he have to go?
To this point, I've held back on saying this, but I've watched as the OIG Lane Little was let go quietly on a Friday. They brought somebody on very quickly who was the prior one who, to be honest, hadn't ever found this to be a problem. And yes, they have a new investigator on it, but until Nathan Kipp is rehired and Nathan Kipp is put back in, I think other people should be let go, including the superintendent.
I'm with you on that one. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot, if you're listening, you got the bully pulpit on this. So you can really, you're the most powerful voice in the city right now. And if you use that voice and directed it, this is me speaking, not Scott. If you use that voice and directed it at the Park District, it'd be sort of like when you came out strong against Eddie Johnson at the police department. So it's a powerful voice, and I hope we hear you using it loud and clear in this, because this is a disgrace.
It's not just one person, though. It's a lot of people who've been culpable with this whole thing, and there needs to be sort of a up and down look. And I think Kipp was the only one doing that. And I think that's why he was fired, because they realized this guy's actually doing his job.
Yeah, I'm with you.
He's got to be let go.
I this one struck me. We talked about it on the show, and I love you, Nick. You know, I love you, Nick Spizzato, for the alderman of the 38th ward. But when they had the committee hearings for the new Park District board members.
Yeah.
And somebody was asking him about it. Nick was trying to protect them, saying, they're not on the board now, so don't ask them about it. And I'm like, no, Nick, there has to be a change at the Park District. And the people who, it's an appointed board system. The mayor makes appointments that are approved by the city council. And the new board appointees have to address this matter and just take a stand publicly that they wouldn't, go along.
That's actually a better point, to take a stand. Are you going to take a stand against sexual harassment or assault of minors? Or are you going to say, well, if there was something wrong there? Well, holy smokes. I mean, I was able to find the board report. It's right there in front of everybody. It says it happened. And the three individuals who they know of that committed the first three acts, not to mention dozens of others, dozens of people involved here, those three guys were allowed to walk away. One of them was on the do not hire list for CPS because he had assaulted minors before that. This is what is outlandish about this whole thing. And I get fired up about it because those board members who got up there that were getting appointed were sort of like, well, if, we'll take a look or whatever. But it's like, wait a minute, didn't you just read the report? Take a stand. Take a stand for these girls and boys who were assaulted. Because if you don't, it's obvious there's other people over there who aren't going to do it.
Yeah. No, that's that old Chicago mentality. You just go along. All right. Since we're talking about Chicago mentalities and going along, we'll close with this. We already alluded to the infamous 2011 budget of Mayor Rahm, an embarrassment to the city of Chicago. I know, Scott, you agree with me on that.
2012, I think it was. But
it was 2012.
Right. Yeah. The mental health clinics.
I'm going to make a bet lunch at the restaurant of your choice that actual budget vote came down in November of 2011.
Oh, okay. For the 2020 or 2012 budget. You're right.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. The point is, the backdrop to that was redistricting. And the city council was of all the wards are about to redistrict it. And that was the little squeeze that Mayor Rahm. You want your seat? You got to agree with me to close mental health clinics in high crime areas. What a mayor. Yeah. you voted for him, Chicago. All right. So what role do you think redistricting will be playing? It's going to happen as well next year. What role do you think redistricting will play in this budget process?
Well, it did come up with the Board of Elections just now. And to give you a quick recap of our hearing just before I got on the show, it was Board of Elections and then HR. They did talk about they have more money in their budget to make sure that voters get notified of those new borders that would go into place hopefully at the end of this year. So the Latino caucus, the Black caucus, they've already started drawing up all their maps. some of us have looked at our maps, but they definitely have hundreds of thousands of dollars to do notifications to people as those boundaries get redrawn. And the mayor's pretty much stayed out of this. I remember the back room back in that day, 10 years ago, was Dick Mell, Ed Burke, Pat O'Connor running the show. And Ron was upstairs and they were sort of, you know, there was an elevator going back and forth. How do you want these boundaries drawn? You know, do you want Lincoln Yards to get, you know, carved out? Don't let Scott have any of it. And those were little quirky things. But I think this year you see the mayor saying, hey, you know, you guys work your thing. We'll make sure we have the budget there to transfer. I've already talked to several people and said, you know, we can't have the shenanigans that we had last time. We have to have very clear ordinances that say which date everything transfers over for zoning changes and all that. But so far, aldermen seem to be working pretty well together. We've had one public hearing last week, and we're supposed to have three more, I believe. We have the independent maps. We have MALDEF, I've heard, might be drawing their own map, depending on what the Latino caucus does. But it seems to be, there's probably border disputes, but a lot more at ease between the full council so far.
Just, folks, think about what he said in 2011, in the back room drawing the map. Dick Mell, Patrick O'Connor, and Ed Burke. What a rogues gallery. And they're sending up messages to Rahm, who's wheeling and dealing. And I'm going to disagree with you, Scott, on your choice of words. It wasn't a quirky little thing to take Lincoln Yards out of your ward. Had they Lincoln Yards stayed in your ward, it would have been a different situation. But yeah, they intentionally took it out of your ward because they knew that you would be a voice of independence on that, and their little TIF handout wouldn't sail through, and it ended up being Brian Hopkins. And it's a big difference between Alderman Brian Hopkins running the show and Alderman Scott Wagasback. I'm just going to say that right now, okay? Now, I don't know if you could have killed the Lincoln Yards deal, which is a disgrace and debacle that's causing the taxpayers a lot of money for no real good reason, but you may have been forced them to scale back the amount of handout.
It wasn't just the TIF. Remember, they got the cut rate deal on the fleet facility, you know, which we needed. We needed for logistics. I mean, if there's ever a massive snow, a tsunami, a lake tsunami, whatever, you know, you want fleet facilities near to different areas of the city so you can work out of. And for us, there was a lot of other issues there that just got overlooked or rammed over. So you're right.
I just said, let's get those garbage trucks on the south side so we can open up this land for development on the north side. Welcome to Chicago.
Yep.
All right. Scott, I want to thank you for taking the time. You're obviously a lot busier these days than you were when I first met you in 2007.
Yeah, it's a finance committee. You know, I was going to say we cut our staff pretty dramatically, as you know. You know, we moved over workers' comp, so I'm working with basically about three or four people versus, I don't know, dozens. But we're getting the work done. It's just a lot more time and effort. And, but I think we're doing, if I could say, I think we're doing a pretty good job, and we've really tried to open this up to in a way that hasn't been for several decades.
All right, let's get a prediction from you then. How many yes votes for this year's budget?
I would say at least 40.
Dang,
maybe 40 to 45.
All right, 40 to 45.
There's still a lot to work around the edges, but I think aldermen are saying, you know, where could we do a little bit more on some of the issues? But a lot of this stuff is also coming with different programs where we're seeing investments in South and West. You know, so if aldermen are getting the funding they need and we're pushing it away from the north side, we might see some change there.
Well, the only reason I want a 40 to 45 vote, not the only reason, but the main reason, because I want to see Pat O'Connor's next article in the Sun-Times. I love it. They always go to Pat O'Connor, the bright one, like after a vote, it's like 27 to 22 or whatever. And Pat O'Connor's like, well, in our day, we got 48. You know, we knew how to do it. I'm like, oh, man, cut it out, dude. Your day was the parking meter, okay? You proud of that vote? Your day was the Lincoln Yard handout. You proud of that vote? Anyway, sorry about that, Scott.
Oh, no, I remember. I still have the scars from all those readings. Yeah.
But you should probably read those articles where Pat O'Connor's going, you know, we got 45 votes.
Well, remember, too, on the council floor, they always kind of knew. They always did a good job of counting their votes. And they knew who the holdouts were. So they would either look at maybe Arena or I or look at me. And you remember the commentary. You always remember the commentary.
Oh, yeah.
They're mocking you for, you know, one particular vote. And I tell the mayor, I've told other people, I'm like, you know, you shouldn't say anything bad about people who are voting no when they're taking a policy stand or a personal stand on issues. Just let them vote that way. And that's the way it should be. You know, if they've got an issue with it, let them do it. You know, having gone through that pain for several years before that, I can attest to it, but, try to be fair and try to let people vote their conscience.
That's a good spot to end it. Scott, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show. I'm putting up with my microphone. I hope you could hear my questions. You seem to respond to my questions, so I guess the microphone worked well enough for you to
just
hear.
Just enough, yeah.
Just enough. Here I am in Los Angeles, beautiful downtown LA. I'm going to put my shades on and go hang out. So thank you very much, Scott Wagasback, and
welcome,
I hope
sir.
To talk to you real soon. All right?
Thank you very much.
All right. That's Scott Wagasback, alderman of the 32nd Ward, chairman of the Finance Committee. A lot of interesting comments he had made somehow or other. Nate and I staggered through this show. I don't know how. Between my voice, which I seem to be losing, I don't know why, and my microphone, which isn't really working, I don't know why. It's the odds are against us, but we prevailed. So, Nate, great job. I want to give a shout out to Dr. D, who's taking the day off. I think he's playing in a golf tournament somewhere. Just made that up. I have no idea what he's doing. I just know he took the day off. Let's just say he's playing golf. Dr. D loves golf, ladies and gentlemen, but he'll be back tomorrow. But I think that Dr. D and Scott Wagasback would agree that DJ Nate did a great, great job sitting in for him. And so Dr. D and Scott Wagasback will say, Nate, give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.